Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Seriously?
It's showtime.
Hello to the MAM fam and to the MAM VIPs here on the main feed this week for a little bonus episode and a little Oscar talk. Yes, we're finally in the midst, in the depth of Oscar season here on the show. Brian couldn't make it this evening. He had to save his vocal cords for Pixar's Coco, which we'll also be reviewing this week. But this gives Richard and I an opportunity to step aside and to talk about Lady Bird. And no one loves first ladies more than Richard Barton.
I know. I'm pumped, man. The long-awaited biopic of the Ying to LBJ's Yang, Lady Bird. And this, I definitely saw this movie, and I saw it, and I enjoyed it, and I thought the portrayal of Lady Bird Johnson was fantastic. Is that good?
That's pretty much it. And yeah, where can we find you online?
You can find me online.
Wow. Actually, Brian saw the movie too, but we didn't think tacking this on a Pixar episode or something like that was appropriate because of the reception and the discussion that this movie kind of is getting and that it deserves. And so here's an opportunity for us again to step aside and to talk solo about Lady Bird. And this is going to be a good one. I'm excited for this. This is kind of the first movie of the year that I felt like, okay, here we are. We're starting to, the good ones are starting to roll here. You know, I felt like we were kind of in the hangover from the summer for a little bit too long, and never really felt like anything good had come along to kind of push us into the fall, into the award season. But this I definitely feel like we're there now with Lady Bird. But Richard, yeah. I haven't caught up with you in a long time, and the listeners are really curious to know a little bit about your trip. You took a honeymoon trip, like that.
Not a honeymoon,
just a vacation,
just a vacay. Mm-hmm. Last Christmas, I got Sarah a cruise for Christmas, and then I found out I had to go on.
Because of the Florida Georgia Line song and her affinity for it.
Absolutely.
And you did this whole karaoke thing when you gave it to her.
Absolutely. I rolled the windows down. Yeah. Well, I wanted her on our last cruise together in the Caribbean. She had gotten half the Florida Georgia Line kind of tramp stamp done, but we ran out of time on the excursion, so we had to go back to the tattoo parlor in Cozumel finish the job, and it looks fantastic. Looks fabulous. I did a cruise, did a Caribbean thing out of Miami, and went to the Grand Cayman in the Cayman Islands, which was great. Did a cool catamaran stingray swimming, snorkeling type.
Now, what's the difference between the Cayman Islands and the Bahamas? Just different location, or
they're
the same.
They're at war together. They are very much at war together. No, they're different island chains. So the Bahamas are more east of what Florida, and whereas Grand Cayman is kind of south around Cuba from Florida. So so we did the catamaran, which was cool. I'm a big people may not know about me, and I don't know if you know this about me. I'm kind of a I don't know what the word is. It's got to be some Latin word for this. I love sailboats. I have a weird affection.
I'm a sailor. I'm sailing.
I am. Like, I, whenever you see these, like, real, you know, you see stories about billionaires and their lives, all of it seems stupid and way over the top, except for the part where they have like a $21 million sailboat. And I'm like, I absolutely get that impulse. That's exactly what I would do with the money. So that was fun for me just to be on a sailboat, because I don't get to do that very often.
I would sink it within 7 minutes.
Well, I didn't drive it.
You hire somebody to do it. Yeah, that's
a really cool guy from Grand Cayman named Dexter. Shout out to Dexter. as only a man in Grand Cayman can be named. And so, yeah, Dexter took us on that and with a few other couples. And then we went to, after that, we went to Roatan, which is an island off of Honduras, which was really cool and beautiful. It looks like Jurassic Park. It's really like heavily forested and stuff. So a little Grand Cayman's nice. Like the water's really nice, but it's super developed. Like it looks like a suburb just in the middle of the ocean. It's not really like naturally beautiful itself as an island. You know what I mean? So like, at least not the part where I was on. So it's kind of like if Bedford, Texas was just floating in really beautiful blue water and you're like, I guess that's
generic
pretty
suburb. Yeah.
Exactly.
At least it's developed. I mean,
yeah, exactly. No,
it's primitive.
There's pros and cons to it, but at the same time, it's not until you get out in the water, which is stunning. It's not necessarily gorgeous. And then Roatan was beautiful. And we had like an all-inclusive beach day plan there. However, it monsooned. Like it rained so hard the whole time we were there. So that was kind of, so I just sat in a tent type apparatus and ingested. Yeah. It was an all-inclusive. So, you know, you can imagine the amount of food and alcohol when it's raining that I was able to ingest. Somehow made it back to the boat.
Actually very impressive. Yeah. There should have been some kind of representative from Guinness
somehow
there to witness it.
Made it back to the boat. Yeah, my cheap Irish jeans kicked in. I was like, this is free. I wasn't even hungry. I'm just mowing down quesadillas that were terrible. And then the next day we went to Belize, which was beautiful. Did an all-inclusive kind of beach day there, which was lovely. And met some nice people that were on our boat. So kind of made some friends, like I do. And then the last day was Cozumel, which is just like tourist trappy, but it's beautiful and there's a beach. And we did that. And then on the boat, yeah, just hung out, ate a lot. I don't partake in shows or any of that tomfoolery. I basically use the ship. If anyone does a cruise, I had never cruised before going on one a couple years ago with Sarah. So I didn't know anything about it. It's my third one now. Just don't splurge on the room because you're never in there. Just get the cheap interior room and just treat the boat as like as an Uber with a buffet on it that's driving you to nice islands. You know, I just sleep and I eat a lot and I talk to people. I don't partake in any of the tomfoolery, but a lot of people seem to enjoy it. So that's great. And then, yeah, back to Miami, spent a day in Miami on either end of the trip too, which was
nice.
Tough.
Nice.
I have to tell you this though, if anyone knows me, I haven't told Brian this, but, the most angry I've ever been was in the Miami airport, because I was used to eating whenever I wanted, on the ship and at the stops. We were in the airport and I hadn't eaten in like 3 hours and I was the most hungry I've ever been. It's amazing how quickly your body adjusts to just being completely pampered food wise. And so, I'm like, I'm so starving. And so, you know, that ever happened to you where like you get a terrible fast food in your brain and that's all you want. I don't know if this ever happened to you.
McDonald's.
It was McDonald's. So I was like,
only when you're in an airport do you want McDonald's. It's like, God, I can't stand McDonald's. Immediately walk into an airport, you're like, egg McMuffin? Where?
Exactly.
Hash browns? So
I had McDonald's on the brain. Yeah. And so there were some nicer, like, you know, kind of Cuban style restaurants or Miami food or whatever. And I'm just blowing by them because like a quarter mile down this long terminal, I see the
Golden Arches. Yep.
See the arches. So I just start hauling and we got to the airport pretty early, got through security really quickly. So it was like, I got time. I'm loading up. I'm just going to be so happy. I'm going to sleep with feeling terrible on my flight. So I book it down. I have a picture. I block the quarter mile terminal just already. You know, that thing where you're pre-eating it, like your saliva is already tasting like what you're about to eat because you're so excited.
Yeah.
And so I'm just hauling to the McDonald's and I get to it and I find out the M was not the M for McDonald's. It was M for the Miami Heat merchandise store.
No. There was no McDonald's in an airport?
No McDonald's. And worse, Miami Heat gear everywhere. Oh, and I'm a Mavericks fan. Yeah. I hate the Miami Heat more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was about as angry as I've ever been. I killed a stranger.
You settled for Burger King or Wendy's?
I got, what's the one that's hot? Nathan's hot dog.
Oh, ugh. That's all they had?
It was all.
That's all the junk food they had?
And, you know, that's it was junk. Stupid. That was junk. It was foolish. I got some like something called tailgate fries. Big shout out to Nathan's if they want to sponsor us. Delicious. But I was just, I had spent so much money on the trip. I was just not, there were some nice restaurants in the Miami airport. I was not willing to spend more than like $8 because of principle.
Yeah.
And so, I got Nathan's, but it was terrible because I was, my mouth was set on McDonald's flavor. And instead I just saw like Udonis Haslam jerseys. Yeah. I was like, that's a weird, this McDonald's decorated bizarre. And then I was just furious. So anyway, that's weird, the end of my trip.
Weird tribute to Chris Bosh here, but, I guess he was a good player. Oh, there's still just his jerseys on sale. Oh, what is, oh.
I go up and still order.
Yeah. quarter pounder, please.
I'll take a quarter pounder, fries, Diet Coke, and, yeah, you know what? I'm going to get this Dion Waiters jersey as well.
Great. Well, all that to say, did you catch up on any movies on the flight or cruise or anything like that?
I watched.
It's a good time to rewatch movies that you previously seen. Maybe you want to just brush up on. What did you do?
I saw the movie. They had movie night every night on the boat out on the pool, by the pool.
Ooh,
it was mostly kids' movies.
They showed Jaws.
I watched Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 one night, like an hour of it.
Yeah.
That was cool. And then on the way there, I think I watched. I don't know why. It was the only thing. You know, I don't like to call out companies because we're always about sponsors, but I don't think American Airlines is ever going to get here. American Airlines needs to get it together with their on-demand sitch. I fly Southwest and American mostly. Southwest definitely owns with the... First off, you can bring your own device, which is cool, and then B, way better like TV selection and movie selection. But I watched about 45 minutes of Snatched with... Goldie Hawn and Amy Schumer. It was not good.
Did not.
I don't
do well.
Like because of my status as a semi-professional critic. I like to preface this by saying I did not watch the entire movie, so I don't like to review things I didn't see all of unless I walk out in the theater. That's different, obviously. But so I feel bad that I only saw 45 minutes. I hate judging it. So, I would say
I
45 minutes. I know. Well, you're on an airplane.
Yeah.
It was like that or like Arthur. Like the old 80s movie with Dudley Moore. It's like, that's what? It. Who's, you know what I mean? It was like the worst. Who's buying the rights to these? It was a bizarre thing. And I had a giant, I guess it was heading out of the country, but both ways I had a 767, like old school 80s Boeing 767, which was weird for like a Miami to Dallas flight. That's not that long of a flight, but I'm sure it was heading elsewhere both ways. But yeah, that's pretty much my trip, man. It was uneventful. It was nice. Got some relaxation, read a few books, saw some cool places. I always say, you know, cruising is like the appetizer sampler of vacationing, where you can kind of spend 8 hours in a few different places, and then if one really kind of tickles you, you go, you know what, next vacation let's just come here for a week. Let's just get the mozzarella sticks next time. So it was solid, but it's good to be back. We did some episodes with Brian yesterday. Back in the fold, boys. It's good times. Good times. How about you? How have you been, man?
You know what? I've been good. Just kind of bearing this NFL season and ready for it to be over. And that's pretty much it. Catching up on a lot of TV, a lot of movies. And it's been good times in that regard.
I always think, you know, every year I think, oh boy, this is exciting. When the Cowboys lose at the end of the year, which is sad. I'm a Cowboys fan. That's never fun. But I go, oh, yay, I'm going to get my friend Kent back. But I never do because it's like it never ends for you. I always feel bad. It's like I always think your life's just going to be cake until September. But then before I know it, you're doing draft stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you're just... I mean, it slows down a bit. But
the bad part about it is when I'm the most free is when the worst movies are out. So it's January and February, and we're going to see XXX5 or whatever it is. And,
Kellen Lutz, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He doesn't let you down in February.
Yeah.
That's true. He's the king of February in my book.
But no, it's been good. But so what? Tell me, better movie, Snatched or Lady Bird?
Wow, that's tough. Both, I felt empowered as a female for both. But I would have to say because of Saoirse Ronan's beautiful performance as Lady Bird Johnson and the way they handled LBJ's, you know, kind of accidental rise to power, and the way they kind of covered her relationship with Sam Rayburn as kind of a father figure for her and how that really helped Lyndon's political career. I have to say it's Lady Bird. By what if I did this whole thing?
Just the whole episode.
It was just clear I didn't see it. I was just BSing my way through it. And I actually thought it was about Lady Bird.
That's actually funny because that happened on local radio earlier today. I was listening driving.
Oh, really?
And they were saying they were going over the Oscar buzz movies or something like that. And they said Lady Bird Johnson movie is doing really well. And they had to come back the next segment and correct themselves and preface. It's like, don't go expecting to see a Lady Bird Johnson movie because that's not what it is. We're sorry.
If anyone were to make one, it would be Greta Gerwig, though. I mean, the voice, you know, that's definitely her wheelhouse, I would say, is, you know, kind of shy first ladies is what I think when I think
shy first. Greta Gerwig's first. Yeah, it is. It's just shy first ladies.
Yeah,
you know, old
anyone
books.
Can make.
Very lacy clothing, you know, just kind of flowing in the wind.
Well, yeah, when she does her Mary Todd Lincoln one, that's the one.
I can't wait.
You know, yeah, that's the one that's going to tear people, rip people up.
It's good to see her back though, because
love Greta.
Last time we talked about Greta was when she was doing that pilot for How I Met Your Dad.
Yeah, that was so weird that she was involved in that.
Yeah, and she was on Colbert promoting this film and talking about that experience and just kind of where she's been over the past few years, really.
Yeah.
And what happened was, it was this huge thing, How I Met Your Mother ended. They were going to spin it off to How I Met Your Dad. They shot the pilot. She said they took it to Las Vegas, and they took it to a focus group there. And basically, they give you a knob. So you turn the knob left if you don't like it, and you turn the knob right if you do, like throughout the entire show. And she said that when they were watching the show, they were turning the knob left only when she was on screen, the entire focus group. And so they obviously didn't pick up the show and didn't move forward with it. But she said that kind of wrecked her, you know, when they hate you that much.
Yeah.
Like the general public just kind of hates you. It's awful context for her to be seen in that. It just seems like a weird fit now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it was a blessing for that not to happen for her. But she's super talented. We talked about her a lot. Frances Ha, it might have been in my top 10 that year.
It's great.
I definitely
movie, yeah.
recommended it. It was really cool, and I think it's still on Netflix, but she's great in that, and the whole movement she's involved in with, I hate to say Lena Dunham, but the whole mumblecore kind of movement genre that she's known for, I really enjoyed her work, and she's been someone that we've rooted for, and you only want the best things for the people that you root for, and and so, having said that, Lady Bird is the most successful movie ever on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's crazy.
The most, it's received more positive reviews than any other movie. I think Toy Story 3 might have been number 2 with 163 recommends, and this has 170 and growing at this point, and they're all positive, zero rotten, 100%.
Well, that's about to change because I hated this number.
You're the one guy.
I'm the Armand White.
Can we please get accredited for Rotten Tomatoes just for so Richard Barton can be like, didn't really get it. Never really understood what they were going for.
You know, I read those LBJ books and none of this happened.
Just and it says Richard Barton, LBJ biographer, like whatever. LBJ just historian.
I can't do
not
anything
accurate
about it.
At all. LBJ historian.
It goes down to 99% because some idiot just didn't understand.
Yeah,
I forgot, by the way, Greta Gerwig was in Jackie, so that might have been the genesis of this. You know,
yeah,
she's covered two back to back. So
I don't actually know the genesis of Lady Bird, the name, but maybe there's some kind of connection there with LBJ. I'm assuming there is.
I mean,
random.
maybe it's a trilogy, you know, like, you know, she's, you know, maybe Pat Nixon is next. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited for Greta Gerwig's Pat Nixon biopic.
Wow. That's going to be.
Okay. Great. We'll stop those jokes now.
Yeah, we're done.
This is a really, really interesting movie. It makes me excited for Oscar season. It's, you know, we talked about, Brian and I did a VIP episode this week for Broadcast News. And a lot of what we talked about on that was the really delicate way it mixes in the drama and the comedy, and how much I love those kind of movies that are kind of all over the place tonally and feel like real life. And this certainly, certainly does. There's a few kind of things that are very interesting about it, but you know, I think the two lead actresses are fabulous. It's so funny. I've been, I didn't know this until about like 3 or 4 years ago, but I love listening to podcasts that are like long form interview with anyone. And a lot of people that are actors that I really, really respect, they always talk about this like kind of Chicago theater scene of the 70s and 80s and how it was the most exciting acting and acting training going on in these various companies in Chicago. Of these people that all kind of came from the scene, and it's tons of actors, you know, but it's so funny. All of them always say, I saw Laurie Metcalf in this play in Chicago. Laurie Metcalf taught me this, but, and she's the best actress I've ever known. And but all these really people, tons of people you would really know and respect, from Nick Offerman to, you know, everyone, mm-hmm. anyone that comes from kind of the Midwest. And so it was cool to be like, I mean, and I always thought Laurie Metcalf was really great in Roseanne and things like that, but you've never really gotten to see her do something in at least in the film world that's like worthy of her apparent prodigious talents, apparently. So it was really cool to be like, oh wow, it felt great as someone who didn't get to go to cool avant-garde theater shows in Chicago in 1984, even though I wanted to.
Yeah.
Duh. It was cool to get to witness someone. She's a powerhouse in this. I mean, I can't see how she's not nominated for supporting actress. She's great in this, and Saoirse Ronan continues to be, you know, such an interesting young actress with such an incredible range, I think. But yeah, it's a really interesting film. But I'm excited to talk about it more with you.
Yeah, I thought this is first of all Greta's first directorial debut, or her first movie directing, I should say. And I was extremely impressed, first of all, just with her knowledge and technique behind the director's chair, in the director's chair. This was just the style that she showed. I mean, the way this thing is edited, it's definitely a polished film. It's not like she just sat there and said action and then threw this thing together. I mean, there's technique here. There's definitely a distinct style to what she's doing.
Yeah.
And that's just really impressive the first time out of the gate to see like, wow, this is somebody that could have directed 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 great movies by now, just with how much she knows about how to make a movie. So yeah, I was really impressed.
I wonder how much, you know, she's domestic partners, dating, whatever, Noah Baumbach, uh-huh. For, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. I wonder, I didn't really,
she helped what her?
No, I would never say that. No, yeah. But I think I'm really kind of marveled at this, because it didn't reek of any of his kind of style.
Pretension.
It was he has his own kind of Wes Anderson, thing. But you know, to me, it was a really, if you had told me, and Greta Gerwig's going to direct her first film. And by the way, this may read as like sexist. I would say the same thing if she was the director and it was Noah Baumbach's first film, but like someone that's, you know, an actor or actress that's with someone that's a director, you would think if they were to spin off and do a movie on their own, it would kind of reek of that director just kind of by osmosis and stylistic choices and things like that. But this didn't feel at all like him. It felt really, really unique. And I, such a testament to her. Like, this is so her own voice. And she's always been a really interesting actress, who makes cool choices and really has, she's just cool, right? I mean, she's always been cool.
It felt more to me like Alexander Payne, Richard Linklater, John Hughes.
Yeah, it was much more Linklater.
Art House or anything like that. You know, it felt way
didn't have
more,
any affectation to it. It was more Linklater, like, this is just, we're going to let these characters exist and let's all find out what happens to them in here. That's a great comp.
Yeah. It, in a very complimentary way, this is kind of the Seinfeld thing of a movie about nothing. I mean, this is like when I recommended this to somebody, I saw this over the weekend. And so when I got to work this week, I wanted to tell people like, oh, I saw this movie. You should go see it. It's called Lady Bird. And they're like, oh, what's it about? And then I'm like, it's about this girl in high school. And she's like, got a family, you know, like that's, I'm trying to explain what it's about. And that's what it's about. But it's so charming, and the performances are so genuine, and you care about the people and the relationships and what's going to happen to every person in the cast and the setting and the city of Sacramento for some reason. I never thought I'd feel sympathy for that or them, but I do.
Vladdy Divac was incredible in this,
I mean, it was incredible. When they brought Jason Terry in, it was – that's when you really know. But it – It worked on so many levels, but in the simplest way. I mean, oftentimes the movies that I come out on top of the year talking about towards the end when we do our top 10 episode are the ones that you and I would make. I mean, this reminded me of something that you and I would have done. I mean, all the little stuff about growing up in a private school and wearing the uniforms and the girls having to get their skirts checked and everything that we grew up with. There's so much of that in this movie that I really, really liked. And I mean, this was weirdly set in, I guess it's not weird for Greta because that's when she grew up, but in like 2002, 2003, like right when we were in high school or going into high school. So it's like a really weird time for a movie to be set. It's not like current day. It's not like in the 60s or 70s. It's just like that time when Cry Me a River was number one, you know, that random time in the aughts. So I really like that about it. That drew me to it personally. But I'm just from a technique standpoint, from an acting standpoint, from number three, a writing standpoint, this it was home run for all three of those aspects that I look for in a movie. So yeah, it blended comedy and drama real well. I would say it's more of a comedy.
Yeah,
it made me laugh a lot, but it definitely has a tearjerker moment or two towards the end. But continue. I've been taking the stage a little too much. Go ahead.
No, I think, you know, definitely for our, you know, Greta, I think, is about our age. And so there's something that maybe we got out of this that others wouldn't to the level that we did, just because it's like, oh, that was my high school experience. Yeah, Kent and I also went to a private school. It wasn't ritzy like that one, but
it wasn't Catholic,
but you know, we know what the uniform cinch is, and for me, you know, like I had a I was raised pretty much by a single mom, and so like that, like very, very close, even though, you know, Lady Bird's a girl and I wasn't, and currently still am not, but but that kind of like very symbiotic kind of almost codependent relationship and the pressure that can put on you on both ends, you know, the pressure to be everything as a parent, the pressure as a kid to not stress out that one parent or not to go too far and abandon that one parent. For me, it's something that really resonated with me just because of my particular life experience. So we talked about this, sometimes I'm hesitant to say something's truly great, because it's so truly great for me because of things I've gone through in my life and how personal it felt. So I sometimes think I'm can be blinded by that, but to me, this seemed like sort of and I suppose Rotten Tomatoes and 170 critics agreed that this is sort of an objectively really great film. And I mean, unless there's some killer stuff, I think should walk away with some Oscars, maybe a screenplay and a performance, because I can't imagine things being much better than this. I'd be surprised if it won Best Picture, just because this size of movie never really wins Best Picture. I wouldn't be shocked at all if this is Best Original Screenplay or, you know, Best Supporting Actress or Best Actress or something. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I would say Saoirse will probably get a nomination for actress.
Yeah.
But she's going to be up against Meryl Streep. So you know how that's going to go.
And Frances.
Right. And I would say Laura Metcalf will probably get a supporting actress nomination.
Which is really cool.
Which is going to be cool and well-deserved. I wouldn't be surprised if Greta gets a director and a screenplay nomination for it as well. Can't really say any other Oscar categories. Maybe some critics awards it'll win because just how well received it's been amongst the critics.
Yeah, so. I did this kind of Oscar preview thing I'm going to put in the newsletter next week, and I've got it in front of me. And I think I did five films, why I'm excited for them personally, and then awards that could be in line for, to be nominated for. And I put this one as original screenplay, lead actress, supporting actress, best director. And I could see this getting a best picture nomination.
Oh, yeah, nomination for sure.
Yeah, I think it'll definitely. So I think it could conceivably get five nominations, which is nothing to shake a stick at. And it could win one or two of those, which, right. I mean, granted, we haven't seen the rest of the crop from this year, but this is a pretty, this is going to be a heavy hitter, yeah. I think, at the awards.
So the National Board of Reviews list came out today, the winners.
Nice.
And so Lady Bird won Best Director, Best Supporting Actress.
Nice.
So that's where it won. I don't know what it was nominated for, but
yeah, I think Metcalf has to be the front runner right now for supporting actors, number one, because it's a incredible performance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and that's sometimes a weaker category, the supporting actress, because God forbid we write two good roles for women in a movie.
Right, exactly. Sad, but
no, I mean, just how it is. And she seems like
five women were nominated from Hidden Figures or whatever in one category. It's the only movie about women this year, so.
Right. But I think also could be a contender really to win because, like I talked about earlier, it seems like every actor has, she's like the actress's actress, you know?
Oh, sure.
So she could have a lot of love.
Meryl Streep won best actress in this National Board of Reviews named her best actress. So
yeah, that looks like it's a, you know, there's two types of Meryl Streep nominations. There's ones where she's nominated because she's Meryl Streep. And then there's ones where she's unbelievable. And if this is it, then that's totally, I mean, it seems like I could see Katharine Graham. I know a lot about just because of weird, nerdy things about me. And I can really see her killing this role and knocking it out of the park. So I don't think this will be a Forrest Foster Jenkins type situation.
I hope not. Or Into the Woods or whatever. Yeah. So the National Board of Review named for their best films. This would be their Oscar nominees for Best Picture. Baby Driver, Call Me By Your Name, The Disaster Artist, Downsizing, Dunkirk, The Florida Project, Get Out, Lady Bird, Logan, and Phantom Thread.
Cool. Yeah, so, my five to kind of watch out for. I didn't do anything in the past. Because there will be a few things kind of nominated, Logan, Get Out, Dunkirk, Thanks for the Summer. But kind of the Oscar season ones that I wrote about coming soon to a newsletter box near you is Phantom Thread, Lady Bird, The Post, Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I guess maybe I only did four.
They didn't put
the Post Darkest Hour
in there because The Post won Best Film. So those are the other nominees I named.
And Darkest Hour, too, I think will get some buzz, at least in the acting, maybe makeup and stuff like that, cinematography maybe. And then the one that really I don't in, this is the Kent and Brian corner, but the one not to sleep on is if this Star Wars movie is awesome, I could.
Do you think the National Board of Review has seen it, though?
No, I don't think anyone has. So I don't think it's factored into that. So, but I think if the one that they're not accounting for, I'm talking just purely Oscars. I don't know if it'll get any performance Oscars, but
maybe
if
best
this,
picture. Yeah.
Yeah. If this rules as hard as a lot of people think it's going to with Ryan, I could see it getting a best picture nomination.
That would be awesome.
Especially since it's released at Christmas, cause it'll be fresh in people's minds.
Sure.
So that's kind of the one I think best picture wise that people are sleeping on. And I'm not even the Star Wars guy, but if it's great, I mean, Force Awakens was borderline. So if it was
borderline some acting, I think. There was borderline for Daisy Ridley to get nominated.
Sure.
I don't know if it was borderline for Best Picture.
I don't know if it was borderline for Best Picture, but there were some there was some buzz and arguments about it not being nominated.
Yeah.
If people were like, if it's really this great, why? I mean, there were those articles written. So if this one's 10% better than that, it's going to be hard to keep it out.
I think so too. I think so too. Back to Lady Bird.
Sure.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Beanie Feldstein as Jules.
Yeah.
She was hilarious. Who is this girl?
Yeah, no, I know. She is Jonah Hill's sister.
Is she really?
Yeah.
And well, I knew he was a Feldstein originally. I didn't know that was his sister.
She's Jonah Hill's.
Cool. That makes sense.
She's Jonah Hill's sister. She was in that. The only thing I've ever seen her in was in that second Neighbors movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's
interesting. She didn't go with the middle. She didn't go with her stage name. She went with Feldstein. That's why he went with Jonah Hill, because he's like, Feldstein's awful. I'm not gonna be Jonah Feldstein.
Yeah.
Hill's his middle name, actually. So
yeah. So yeah, she's his sister, and definitely has his sense of really
comedic timing,
brightening you know, he's at his funniest in a serious movie sometimes. Even Superbad has really serious moments that he kind of brings some light to. So yeah, no, she definitely has that skill. She's the one, I think, that in, if you remember the trailers for Neighbors 2 where they run the one girl over with the car.
Yes.
Pretty sure that's her as well. That's the only, so she's been on both ends of it.
Yeah, I thought that her relationship with Christine / Lady Bird was authentic, and there how they kind of fall in and out of friendship throughout the movie.
Totally.
And they, you know, leave each other for a dumb reason, then come back to each other, and it's super authentic and sentimental and perfect in all the right ways. I think their chemistry was great between Christine and Jules, because if that doesn't work, I don't think this movie works at all, let alone what Lady Bird, any of the guy relationships she has with Danny or Kyle throughout the movie. I think the real relationship is A, with her and Jules, and B, with her and her mom, Lori.
Yeah.
But so Greta says that this movie is about somebody coming of age while somebody else is letting go. So Saoirse coming of age, Lori letting go, and I think that she tells both of those stories perfectly. I think the scene that's probably the most perfect in describing that is Lady Bird's in the car, and her mom's telling her, you can't get into these schools, you aren't smart enough, I'm not going to call you Lady Bird, that's not your name.
Yeah.
And then Lady Bird just jumps out of the car while it's going, and then it cuts to a cast. Like, she's got her arm in a cast, literally for the rest of the movie until the very end when they cut it off. So there's a lot of cool moments like that in the movie where they just kind of set things up, and there's payoff at the end. And what did you think about her relationships kind of with her friends / with the two guys that she's with throughout the movie?
Yeah, no, you're totally right that that, you know, the sort of the fluctuation in the seriousness of those friendships is very accurate to that age. You and I, we've known each other since middle school. I mean, we've hated each other all the way through it. But you do see people all the time that, you know, that's real. You know, you don't really, the kind of narrative trope of high school, these two best friends forever, and that never happens. You fall kind of in and out of love with your friends constantly because you're just so hormonal.
Right. What the funny thing that kind of described that to me in the movie was when Lady Bird tells, who's the girl she's trying to impress? Jenna.
Yeah. Yeah.
That she lives in this blue house with white shutters. It's like, yeah, that's my house. And then like,
I did that as a little kid.
And then like,
she
gets caught in the lie. Yeah. She gets caught in the lie. And she's like, why'd you tell me that? She's like, I don't know. You know, it's just like something dumb you say when you're in high school trying to impress somebody, and you don't know why you did it other than it was in the moment or whatever. And it sounds stupid, and you know it's stupid, but you do it anyway. And that was perfectly descriptive of that time, that adolescence. I totally agree. Remember when we went Christmas caroling on the day after Thanksgiving?
It was day after Halloween. It was even more annoying. That's what was great. That was the bit. It's November 1st, and people are just getting over Halloween, kind of starting to begin thinking about Thanksgiving, and then just... and all of us in like season
two. Yes, 10 of us. Yeah.
By the way, we grew up in Fort Worth. It'd be, if, I don't know, most years 81 degrees on a November 1st right. evening. And we'd be in like full Dickensian and stuff that we stole from like the high school theater department with like the looking like we're straight out of the Christmas Carol. And then, yeah, your mean one.
And the most odd Christmas Carol.
Yeah, that was the other
the normal ones. Well, the ones that are impossible to make a cappella.
39 and a half foot pole.
Now we're going to do Charlie Brown Christmas. By only musical instruments using our voice. Now, so I said this has an affinity for Sacramento, but it also
if such
has that
thing as possible.
It also has that thing of I got to get out of this town anywhere but here, kind of a thing, kind of an aspect to it too. Big city dreams.
Got to get to the East Coast where my college is going to cost me $60,000. Sorry, family. the dream. It definitely is that's such a good kind of pool for, especially starting with our generation where, gosh, it seems when you watch older films, the narrative is two parents of an 18-year-old. I can't wait for this kid to go to college so we can have our lives back. We can't wait for you to be out of the house. That's like the 70s and 80s and even 90s narrative. It kind of that changed, right? Where you have these parents that need their kids more than their kids need them, and that you can't leave me. My life, you know, that generation for a lot of people really kind of based their self-worth or whatever off their children and their social group and whatever. When that kid leaves, it can be really devastating to a parent. And so that's such an easy way to kind of cue up some drama and the, you know, I want you to stay here. Why can't you go to college here? I want you to stay close. That pressure on a kid, it could be healthy. It can be, hey, you've got to help support this family, blah, blah, or it can be really damaging. Like, you know, a person may not find that, you know, your goal as a parent, I would think, is for your kid to kind of have their full potential. And if you put that pressure on them, it can lead to them not doing so because they maybe don't go away to college or whatever. So it's a fine line to walk. And so that is a really, it seems like that is kind of a trope now because so many people of our generation felt that from their parents. And so it's interesting and it's a really easy narrative device. I don't even mean that as an insult, but it's a great way to apply kind of dynamic pressure, with when you have characters that are parents and children.
Yeah, I really appreciated it with this movie that most movies like this that follow this kind of pattern, this coming of age pattern, is that they always end with, oh, driving off to college, or, oh, I'm turning 18, everything's cool, you know, graduating high school, and then credits roll as the caps are going in the air, right? This actually had a little kind of epilogue scene toward the end of the movie of her actually going to New York, dealing with the situation that she put herself in or that she wanted so badly, and then kind of realizing, like, wow, I had it pretty good back then, and having that whole moment where the mom, you know, the dad salvages the letters from the mom, and she reads the letters and all that. It's very sentimental and good, but I just appreciated that little annex of a story that we get at the end, because this movie would have felt a bit incomplete had we not known how Lady Bird ends up, or at least because it's so funny. She goes to the East Coast and then parties too hard the first night she's there and like gets sick and is in the hospital and like wakes up in the hospital from alcohol poisoning or whatever it is.
Sure.
It's just like a rude awakening for her. And you never want to admit when your parents are right, right? Like that's the worst thing to say. Yeah, maybe I'm in a little bit over my head, like you said I was, and I needed to take it easy.
I know someone, and I'll tell you who off air, that partied so hard on their college visit while still in high school that they got so sick and then the police called on them.
Oh, good grief. Yeah.
And then came back and was like, that's where I'm going to school.
Wow.
So, you know, takes all kinds, I guess.
It's funny in this movie too, how the pop music is used too. I love how a movie can do that and use it organically and makes it sense with the story and everything. I love the bit with the Dave Matthews Band.
Yes.
And them kind of tongue in cheek making fun of it. And Saoirse Lady Bird doesn't kind of have turned things around in her own mind until she can admit that she likes Crash Into Me. And she's like, no, I like this song. And I love that moment. That's the kind of the moment where the most eye-opening moment for her personally in the movie. And also Cry Me a River, like I mentioned, but also One Hand in My Pocket from Alanis Morissette, or A Hand in My Pocket. And they're listening to that in the car, and Lady Bird says randomly, did you know she wrote this song in 10 minutes? Like, out of nowhere. And it has nothing to do with anything, but it's just a funny little like pop-up video line that they throw in here. But this movie is littered with moments like that, and
I really want to see something funny. Like we said, we're the age of this. I happen to look over and see this. This wasn't planned, but I'll make you laugh real quick. Hold on. Let's see if I can still do this.
I'm broke, but I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind.
Like, or is that a tune?
No. Nope.
I know it, though, but it's the weird thing about...
You've got your ball, you've got your dream. I could fill in for DMB anytime.
There it is. There it is. I've got it. Hold on. Let's see if I can still get
it. You got to sing it, too. In three.
Still got it, man. Yeah, haven't played that since I was about 16 years old, but still got it. It's got that cool clock. If you listen to the bass line of that song, the weirdest thing, it's the clock chime. It's literally...
Yeah. Maybe that means it's super technical music.
Exactly. So, yeah, dude.
For somebody who doesn't even play guitar, hasn't played it in 14 and a half years, can pick it up. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Must be really technical.
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
No, I love that. And again, that's just kind of a throwback to our childhood with those things that she threw in here. But again, I mean, this is an experienced director, and she actually did win Best Director from the National Board of Review.
So that rules. That's
not
awesome.
Bad for her first time out, right?
And there's some serious contenders in that, right? You got Spielberg in that category this year. Pardon me, Joe Wright. Who else has big movies?
Edgar Wright, you mean?
No, Joe Wright did the Winston Churchill movie.
Oh, the Dark is Out.
Yeah, Edgar Wright too. And then PTA. I don't know if that was that up for it, because I know that a lot of people have seen that.
Oh, I don't know the nominees. I just know who won.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, if she won and all those were in it, that's some serious.
Totally.
That's not an off year of directorial talent, you know. Sometimes
it's funny,
sometimes
because
these awards are worth more than other years, if that makes sense. Because
in that same thing, they named Jordan Peele as best directorial debut. So we have her and him both
like
their first films, and he
Dak
won
and
best
Zeke
debut.
Situation, right?
Or right. One who do you give rookie of the year? You know,
yeah.
You know, you should never know. But that's kind of cool that the Disaster Artist is getting so much buzz, because I love that concept, and the trailers look funny, and I just hope that is worth anything, because apparently it is, if it's being on all these lists and winning all these awards. It won Best Adapted Screenplay from them as well. So, really cool. I love Lady Bird. This is going to be tough, because I've started to make my own top 10 list of the year. Just kind of writing it down, and every week as I see a new movie, kind of adjusting it and reevaluating and rewatching things. This one's going to be a tough one to place, I will admit, because of its simplicity, because there hasn't really been a movie like this, kind of a, I hate to say a family movie, but one that I could watch with my parents, sister, anybody like that, and kind of still enjoy it. This movie's been really light on like just movie that appeals to the masses. There's been a lot of comic book movies and a lot of good horror movies and things like that.
Sure.
Not really anything in between. This is something like that, and
I've seen
appreciated that.
So many people in my like social media life that are not like nerdy film goers like us, that probably see five movies a year, and they're all posting about this, which is encouraging. You know, that's good. It's resonating with people. And then Three Billboards is doing pretty well too. It's exciting times for kind of adult. I hate saying adult cinema, because that seems skeezy, but that's what it is. You know, movies for
yeah,
not 12
this movie reminded me of The 400 Blows, just in the kind of the Catholic school element of it. And the
Or Igby Goes Down. Remember that movie?
Or Rushmore too.
Yeah.
I got a lot of Jason Schwartzman from Saoirse in this movie.
Totally.
Not necessarily the relationship with the student teacher like that movie, but just the maybe the student part, protagonist part.
That like that. The movie, due to a lot of different Rushmore, I mean, it's not aged particularly well due to a lot of kind of misbehavior by right. teachers,
right?
And well, not students, they're students, but misbehavior by teachers. It's
I love that movie. I love it too.
I love it too. It's so good. It's a great film. I worry that it's sort of greatness may not be appreciated because of, you know, developments in this real world, unfortunately. So do you think, I was thinking about this. Do you think Greta will kind of keep making this type of movie? Well, there's kind of three options here, because it's obviously a deeply personal movie, because she grew up in Sacramento as well, kind of went off to New York, is kind of the quintessential cool Brooklyn person. So there's a lot of her and Lady Bird. Is this a story she needed to tell? And this may be the only movie she ever fully kind of auteurs, writing, directing. Yeah. Will she make more movies like this? Sort of slice of life, you know, Woody Allen-ish kind of small $5 to $10 million movies? Or do you see her kind of scaling up from here and maybe doing kind of a mid-budget, or, I mean, she's never going to direct like Wonder Woman 2 or anything, but something a little, do you see her, I suppose, becoming more of a filmmaker or an actress that kind of makes these cool little movies every few years? Or is this it? What do you kind of see in the future of her?
I don't know. I think maybe with how I Met Your Dad went, that she's kind of like given up the whole I'm going to be a superstar actress bit.
Sure.
And like, I'm just going to do what I know and tell my own stories. And because I'm confident in my own talent and I have great people around me to help me do it. I think that's what I would hope she does, is just do stuff like this, maybe a different, maybe not so autobiographical. I understand she said that nothing in this film has actually happened to her, but it was certainly inspired by her upbringing and people she knew and the kind of life she lived as a child.
Right.
Maybe she does something a little less personal, but still in this style, this drama comedy, lighthearted style I really enjoyed. So hopefully she goes down that path and she gives us more stuff like this, but not necessarily about high school kids or anything like that. I think she can do what she wants. She's super talented. I'm just blown away at how good this was the first time out. I mean, I like her as an actress, but imagine this, Richard. Like, oh yeah, Mila Kunis is directing a movie. Like, oh, cool. I'll see it. Like, but imagine it's as good as anything, you know, Steven Soderbergh's done in the past 10 years. So like, what? From Mila Kunis? Like, I like her as an actress, but just never, I'm just super happy that we have another director out there, another up and comer out there.
Awesome year.
Like, it's good.
For female filmmakers. And I hope that trend continues, because A, it's like, you know, morally, ethically right to have kind of equal things. But B, the stories are more interesting, because like, sorry, dudes, and I'm not trying to play like a crazy feminist here. I'm just saying we've kind of told the story from our angles so many times.
It's not that interesting either.
It's just not that interesting anymore.
No one cares.
And so like, it's actually, I look forward to, even though, you know, if there is a gender war, I'm team dude. We'll take you ladies out. But as just someone who likes original, interesting movies, I'm always more piqued now by a female filmmaker, because it's a perspective that I haven't seen 100,000 times.
Yeah.
And I've seen
it's fresh
like 14 times, and you're like, this is cool. I like the way these characters think. Because guess what? Half the people in the world, more than half, you know, have these kind of sensibilities and pressures and quirks and things that you have to deal with. So like, it's just so much more interesting. I'm so glad, just, you know, yes, you know, politically and ethically I'm happy, but also just from purely entertainment wise, I love it. It's awesome.
Yeah, let's hit grades here, man. Unless you have anything else to say about this.
Nope. C minus.
I like,
what are you
think? I like
I'm kidding.
Just one more thing to comment on. I liked how she, in her relationship, she has the guy she dates is kind of like the theater guy, and sure. he ends up being gay, and then she goes for a completely different kind of guy, you know, like the kind of punk guy and everything. It's just funny to see her in those two different scenes and the like how she reacts to them.
Yeah.
And stuff. Saoirse was just great in this. I mean, I can't say it enough.
She's a great, great actress.
And like Greta probably could have starred in this herself, but I think it was really cool to pick.
Yeah, it's kind of that. Like it's kind of the Superbad thing, right? Where she probably wrote it for herself. I don't know. I just the impulse she might have wrote it for herself, kind of like Seth Rogen did with the
in her own voice or whatever.
Yeah, wrote it in her own voice, like Seth Rogen did for with Seth, the character of Seth in Superbad, and then he looked too old for it, so they got Jonah Hill, who by the way was like a year younger than him, but he looked like he was 18. And Saoirse is not, she's what, 25? But she really pulled off being 17 so much better than Greta would have. So you kind of, you allow good genes to kind of get the good parts sometimes, I suppose.
Yeah. She's just an up-and-coming actress that I'm excited for. I've enjoyed her in bad movies. I enjoyed her in The Lovely Bones. Wasn't that it? What she was in?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And Brooklyn's great. If you haven't seen Brooklyn, it's like so much better
that was so Oscar-y. Oh,
it was, but it's not as beat down as it has to be. You know, it's more entertaining than it seems, but it is Oscar-y for sure.
What was she did one? It was like a young adult kind of The Host. Yeah.
That didn't work
out at all.
That was another Stephenie Meyer.
I seen her in Byzantium. I saw that movie. It was about vampires. It was a pretty good movie. Grand Budapest Hotel. Enjoyed her in that a lot.
She's doing Mary Queen of Scots next, it looks like, with Margot, David Tennant. That'll be super Oscar-y. And then, and The Seagull, too. Which is that based on the play? Yeah, it's the Chekhov play. Oh, that's the Annette Bening and her. I've heard that that's cool. That they're doing a cool version of The Seagull, but and Corey Stoll. Yeah, so she's got some interesting stuff coming up. Elizabeth Moss, who I think is another who's in that The Seagull. I think is another younger actress to really keep an eye on. Kind of that next generation of. Oh, it's in good hands, man. We've got some great young actresses right now. And
they're doing a remake of The Crucible, too.
Yeah.
With her in it that she shot before this, apparently.
I thought that was The Seagull. I think you're thinking of The Seagull because this was shot a while ago. It's completed.
This says Gerwig met with Saoirse Ronan where they were promoting, but she couldn't do it because she had to push it back for a performance of The Crucible. Oh, she was in a play.
Oh, okay. She did the play.
That's what she did. I thought she was shooting a movie. Okay.
Yeah, cool.
That's cool. Yeah, she's somebody you need to stick out and stick around to watch.
And let's see what Greta has coming. I guess I can answer my own question. She's got an animated movie called The Isle of Dogs coming out. It's always stop motion. Oh, that's the Wes Anderson. Yeah. That's the Wes movie. That's right. Gosh. Okay. Yeah. That'll be interesting. Do all the dogs die? Have we made that joke yet? Is there a nuclear missile hits the island and they all die? That's
Spielberg's Isle of Dogs, I think. Okay.
Yeah.
Grades for Lady Bird. This is one of the best movies I've seen all year, for sure.
Definitely my top
five. It's an A+.
Yep. Done. Mark it. Same for me.
I can't think of a flaw right now, honestly.
No, it's...
I usually tear even good movies apart just to say, what were they thinking? But I still liked it. I can't even think of a negative thing to say about this.
It played really well kind of within itself, too. So it'll be interesting.
It wasn't too CWE. You know, like some of those movies can be where it's just like, Amanda Bynes stars in Lady Bird. And then the arrow shows up. Yeah, and it's too made for kids of that age. I don't feel like this was made for teenagers.
It's made for exactly us because it's us when we were in high school.
I think high schoolers would like this. I think like older people would like this. What's cool, funny too, is where she gets her first cell phone because we didn't have cell phones for a long time.
world
until like high school, literally in high school. It's weird that like 3-year-olds have cell phones now, whatever.
I was talking about this the other day. I'd kind of forgotten about it. I had this Nokia phone. If anyone can remember what it was, send a picture, tweet a picture to us. It was a Nokia phone, but it had a rotary dial. Like it was, the numbers were in a circle, kind of almost like a horseshoe of numbers. Apparently that was supposed to be the future of texting. It wasn't. Did not work out. But I was like the first camera phone in my class because I got my new phone. I got my phone late. So everyone had like gotten the Razor or whatever, the brick phone maybe. And so I got mine late. So mine was like 6 months newer than everyone. So mine had a camera and I was very cool for about a month and a half. And
Razor was... I think I had the Razor up until I had the iPhone. Like that's how legit it was until like something else came along. It was the phone. But that's funny. All right. So 2 A-pluses from us. I'm sure Brian.
I found it, Kent. It's the look up the Nokia. Let's see what it was. 3650.
Oh.
You're gonna laugh really hard.
Let's see.
And listen.
Oh my gosh. Wow, that's bad.
I don't remember
you having that.
Yeah, I had that for about a year and a half. Yeah, look it up, listeners. Nokia 3650. See the rotary style buttons? That's the future right there, Kent.
How do you text on that? It's not
you get used to it. You just get used to it, and then it becomes. Then it's weird to go back, but yep, rotary numbers.
Good grief.
Just like the 1950s, but like
I wonder
the
how much
future.
You could get one for right now.
I should bring it back.
Oh, it says $300 on eBay.
I had a picture of myself and American Treasure Bill Walton on that phone, and there was no way to export it because you couldn't MMS from it, you couldn't email from it, and there was no cord to like get it to your computer. So when that phone died, the picture of me and Bill Walton died with it. Very sad.
That is sad. All right, 2 A-pluses from us. We're going to get Brian's grade eventually, but go see Lady Bird. It was hard for me to go see this. I had to go to a non-normal theater.
Yeah,
and It's already made $11 million.
Yeah, it's
$10
a wider
movie.
Release, and I think it'll keep getting wider because this has awesome buzz. So I think, and it's not too art housey. I think I could see this. This could make 30, 40 million, really high end. But I think it'll definitely make 20.
One thing I can't say is that it's very historically accurate. I mean, Lady Bird didn't really go to high school in 2002. She was way before that, almost 100 years before that.
So like
her husband,
it's all allegory, obviously.
Oh, okay.
And
oh, that makes sense.
I just thought it was kind of sloppy because again, I mean, I'm looking at my LBJ biographies, the Robert Caro series right in front of me. And there's many chapters on Lady Bird. First off, she didn't really know her mother. She was actually raised by her doting and very wealthy father. And then an aunt. So that dead on is already wrong, right? She's not, that relationship's already way off. So I just didn't care for the accuracy. So D minus. Rotten Tomatoes.
We do know you're well versed on all things LBJ. So
I am. One of my weird wheelhouses.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Lady Bird.
Claudia Alta, Lady Bird Johnson, by the way.
Directed by Greta Gerwig, is in theaters now. Richard, where can we find you online?
You can find me on all of that pesky social media at Richard Barton. That's Bardon. You can find me on the Mad About Movies podcast website or the Mad About Movies podcast newsletter, which, as I mentioned, is coming out first week of December. And hey, we do this every once in a while. Go on iTunes, leave us a review, 5 stars, preferably write a little nice something. This helps with the advertisers, helps us actually break even on this little show, which is always nice. Go over to iTunes or whatever, Google Play, whatever you use. If they give you, I don't know, do they let you leave reviews in Google Play? Leave us a 5-star with a nice little blurb, and you know, maybe you'll get one read online or on a show. Maybe we'll do that. Kent, where can I find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on the Twitter, Instagram, and Snap at Kent Garrison, and find our show, madaboutmoviespodcast.com. Send us pretentious FU type emails as well. We love those. Keep them coming. Yeah. We're sure that this review wasn't good enough for somebody, so please let us know. And until then, we will see you guys next week when we talk Pixar Coco. I think we're actually talking about that right now. So download that right after this and have a great on time. We'll see you at the cinema. Bye.
Sing.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.